Hello and welcome to episode 164 of the Film Yak Podcast. I'm John.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm JR.
This time around, we're reviewing my film pick, Rapid Fire, from 1992, directed by Dwight H. Little and starring Brandon Lee and Powers Booth, among others. How are you guys today?
Doing good.
Yeah, I think that you're falling asleep mid-sentence, though. I think that's happening, like, actively. Like, your mouth is moving, words are sort of coming out. You're losing it.
You can hear me, though, right?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, good.
But you're losing it.
No, I'm good. I'll be okay. I had two Dr. Pepper Zeros before we started, so I should be fine. And a bunch of Tylenol and Advil so I don't get a migraine.
Pause here. Does too much caffeine give you a migraine?
When I haven't had enough sleep, it does. Yes, yes, sir. Very much so.
Your body produces consequences? That sucks.
Mm-hmm. I had my first migraine when I was working at Tinseltown. Ooh. As a usher and concessions guy. I was working there my very first night. I had my very first migraine ever, and I thought I was going to die. It was like the worst thing ever. And I had to leave. I had to leave early my first night. And then I was trying to figure out what the issue was. That was like 20 years ago. So I've had a lot of them since then. And it's usually like at nighttime when I'm tired. And I feel like there has been multiple times when it's happened when there's been like fire around, like campfires. And I thought like smoke had something to do with it. But now it's just that I stay up too long, and then I drink more caffeine to stay awake longer, and then if I take my cocktail of these Advils here and extra strength Tylenol, I have to take two of the Tylenol and three of the Advil, and then I don't get a headache.
Do you get the aura in your vision?
No, my migraines are real simple, dude. They're just extreme pain above of my eyes, and like I get nauseous, I throw up a lot, more often than not I vomit.
Sarah had one recently, and I ended up having to like leave work because she was like on the floor vomiting and like couldn't walk. I was like, she's not gonna be able to, you know, there's like a 2-month old in the house. It's like she can't take care of a baby. But like I didn't know what was happening. It's like, I don't know that she's had a migraine in like the past 10 years. And I was like freaking out. I was like, usually we need to call like 911. Like, what's going on? And cooler heads prevailed. And she's migraine. But no, those, like, I never had one, knock on wood. And it sounds just like the worst.
That's pretty bad.
Awful. It's pretty bad. Yeah, I mean, like John, my first one was the worst that I had ever had, and it like it was the like Mardi Gras of my freshman year of high school, and like the day, like 2 days earlier, I had just gotten my first base, and like I just get this devastating headache, and like I ended up like sleeping for like most of the break, and tried to cram in getting a project done for class, I envy you, JR, people who like, because like sometimes, like, I don't know exactly what will trigger me either, but like sometimes I know for sure it's like sometimes when I'm seeing something and like for whatever reason like I feel like it's closer to me than it is, and like my brain like can't figure out why. Like I'll start to like, I'll like, man, are my glasses like blurry? And like I'll clean them and like it won't help. And then I'm like, oh, okay. And then it'll slowly just start creeping from my periphery. Oh. And like, yeah, it's
I don't like that.
Yeah.
That sounds, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... Luckily the headaches haven't been so bad for the last like few years, knock on wood. But yeah, it's really a bitch. Especially when you're sitting in front of a computer all day.
Oh, yeah. That doesn't actually affect me, but the whole screen thing. I do get, like, light sensitive, I think. I just need to, like, lay down with my eyes closed in a dark room whenever I have one. And then I still feel like shit, but if I can get to a point where I'm able to fall asleep, it's good. Because I'll definitely wake up and not have it anymore. So.
That's good.
But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Because we're not migraine yak, you know?
We're film yak.
And we're talking a classic action film tonight. Rapid Fire, directed from the director of Marked for Death and Free Willy 2. Dwight H. Little. This one is the sort of breakout film for a young martial artist named Brandon Lee. This was his first, I think, sort of, not his first, his first starring role in a big sort of, well, maybe like medium budget actioner with actors who you recognize, that sort of thing. I did watch Showdown in Little Tokyo, which was a film he made before this, but he is not the star of that movie. Dolph Lundgren is the star of that movie, and he is playing second fiddle to Dolph Lundgren the entire time, and it is brutal, brutal to see that. But anyway, Rapid Fire is about a Chinese man who lives in L.A., right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he's in college, and he's an artist. He loves to draw. And he was there in Tiananmen Square, and his father died in Tiananmen Square at the massacre. And they want him to talk about it, but he's just like, you know what? He's not political. He's not going to talk about it. His dad died. It's too real for him. And he's got his leather jacket and his Harley, and you know what? He's just too cool for school. And he gets tricked sort of into going to this political meeting for the anti-Chinese government protest people. I don't know.
Yeah.
And while there, he witnesses a murder. And that is an inciting incident that leads him on his hero's journey.
And it allows us to forget about, you know, China and politics for the most part.
Well, until you get to the end when she gets him the file, you know.
And they get to
bang over the file.
Nothing makes me hotter than knowing how my dad died.
Yeah.
All right. What did you guys think of Rapid Fire?
So when I was younger, I watched this movie, Surf Ninjas, a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And
fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah. And like, I mean this in a positive way, because I like this movie. Like, for me, this was like the grown up version of Surf Ninjas. Like, it's not, you know, super, like, it's not super to be taken seriously, but it's really, I think it's really good, and I think it was a lot of fun. And I wanted to watch The Crow again, because like, there's little hints of like how good Brandon Lee can be, but I think The Crow was a better vehicle for that. His smart mouth and, you know, Powers Booth just being like the grizzled cop, like he's just perfect for that.
Powers Booth says the line, "Why don't you take those fists of fury of yours outside?" I thought that was a bit egregious.
A clear nod.
Well, I was like, were there other Bruce Lee mentions that I missed?
That's the only one that's on IMDb trivia. So
I wonder if they call what's his face? I wonder if they call him the Big Boss at any point.
I don't think so.
I don't know.
Maybe though. I don't know. Maybe in a subtitle or something.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of interesting how like when Tony is like visiting Thailand or wherever the main bad guy is, like And he's like, you know, watch this. And he's like, you know, beats those two guys up. It's like, I don't know that that necessarily proves how great you are, dude. Like, you're obviously paying these dudes and like, they're going to take the fall for you. But that's, you know, that's small potatoes.
See, I didn't read that way. That's a that scene is a big deal for me. On this rewatch, okay?
What scene is this?
This is the beginning, the opening. The main guy, the main bad guy beats up those two guys with the sticks.
Yeah.
Mm. But I'll get to that in a minute. Let's hear what JR thinks first.
It took me a minute. Like, I think that during the whole, like, L.A. stuff before the shootout, I was not with this movie. I don't know. I was like, we're trying a little too hard with the jacket and the motorcycle and the boobs and Yang, who's like leading the political charge. Like,
you were there, man.
Well, and they also like they just like forgot to like write his speech when he's like on the stage. He's like, Tiananmen Square was a nightmare. It's like, yeah, man, it's fucking incisive shit you got there. Like, that was, like, I was thinking, like, man, this is, like, rough, and I don't know exactly the vibe we're going for. But once we got to the art show, or the whatever, it wasn't an art show. It was an art exhibit happening, right?
Yeah, like the Chinese artifacts or something.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It had art show vibes. It was, like, a white interior displays. Mm. And, you know, it's clear that the model tricked him. I was like, hey, not bad. This Yang guy can't write a speech, but he's pretty devious. We never see him again.
You also have to like that.
Did he die in there?
Maybe. You also have to like, though, that she tricked him and he wasn't even into her, you know? Like, when she asks him out, she's like, maybe you like me better with my clothes on. He goes, don't bet on it. Like, he doesn't give a shit about this girl, you know?
Yeah, oh, yeah, that got him there. And she was attractive.
Sure.
She's attractive. Physically. But, you know, but like, so weird. What once Serrano murders Chang and, you know, he busts through the glass, I was like, the movie is like off to the races. Mm-hmm. And I was having a lot of fun. Anytime there was action, I thought like getting to Chicago is so absurd, but the stuff that happens in Chicago, I thought was great. Powers Booth was we'll say silly, like, you know, just like there's a lot of like machismo stuff happening with him, and that's even brought up at one point, but really enjoyed it. Thought it ended, I was almost like, give me more, you know, with our final fights at the end. Like his fight with Al Lung.
Mm-hmm.
Was awesome.
Yes.
And it was too short. You don't like Mr. Long. Okay.
No. I think that might be my favorite hand-to-hand fight scene in any film ever. So like, it's like the perfect.
So we can't. Yeah.
Right. It's a whole like in drama going on in that fight. It feels like they're fighting, he's losing at first, and then like he realizes how to beat Al Lung somehow, and then he changes his technique up and he's able to beat him and defeat him. But it's still like just all the grappling that they're doing, and like he does the move when he jumps on the fence and like does like the monkey crawl across the fence at that one point to get away from him. Just so incredible. I love that. That's So good. And I love Al Lung. And Al Lung is great in this. Totally comes out of nowhere. Like, you see this guy the whole movie, but you don't know that he can fight ever, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean,
actually, you're assuming if you're, you know, because you're a white audience, a Western audience, that, you know, all the Asians in the movie can fight, but it's like, you don't know how good he is.
They can. They all can. Even Big Boss Guy. But the, yeah, we see him with the, you know, the way that Serrano's murdered in the prison cell.
Oh, he throws the stars, yeah. But, I mean, he doesn't, you know, you don't see him hand-to-hand. You don't see him hand-to-hand fight anybody until then. But it's still, it's amazing. And honestly, I don't remember ever seeing Al Lung fight with martial arts in another movie. I'm sure he has, but I haven't seen that movie. Maybe in like Big Trouble in Little China or something. I don't know.
I was going to say, like, I think he must have, right?
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I don't even remember. I know he's in that movie, but I don't remember him like specifically as a character. He's
apparently in Lethal Weapon. I don't remember.
He's the guy who tortures Mel Gibson. Mel Gibson kills him by breaking his neck. Mm. He's like electrocuting him. Anyways, but he's also in Die Hard. Like, that's the thing that I always remember him from, was he's one of the terrorists in Die Hard. He's got an amazing blood squib that fires out of his back against a wall and kicks out. I guess just jumping back to that first scene then. So this scene really, really changed for me this time. There's something I noticed in this opening fight scene between the main bad guy, whose name is anybody?
You should know it because Powers Booth.
Tao.
Powers Booth Tao. Keeps yelling right. It.
Played by Zima, who is from the Rush Hour films, and more recently The Farewell. Anyways, he's also in The Lady Killers, apparently. Anyway, he fights these two guys the whole point of this opening scene is that Serrano comes to him saying, "Look, I want part of your distribution," right? Saying, you know, and then I deserve it. I made you. You're only who you are now because of me. And he gets pissed off and he goes out into the pit and he grabs a staff and he beats the shit out of these two guys, right? And then he walks up to Serrano and he holds out the stick and he opens his hand, right? Now, you have to imagine, I've seen this movie a dozen times, okay? And I've seen it mostly when I was a kid. I watched it a lot on VHS when I was a kid. And I mean, I've seen it, you know, maybe four or five times as an adult. And every time he opens his hand like that and it close-ups on his hand, I thought he was, like, showing off about how he can balance the staff in his hand. And what's really going on there is he's offering the staff to Serrano, right? He's saying, fight me with the staff. Because what he says the Sicilian proverb, don't ask for what you can't take.
Mm.
So he's telling Serrano, you have to fight me if you want that thing from me. And I never understood that until this viewing. And I watched this movie in the last 5 years, so I am a moron. But I always thought he was like holding it out and like balancing it. And like, I remember thinking one of the last times I watched this, that it's not that impressive that you can balance that staff like that. Like, I could do that. Like, that's not, you know, what kind of a martial artist are you, dude? But I was just totally reading that wrong for like the last 25 years. But I did not get that he was paying those guys off to throw the fight. I mean, it's possible. You can infer that because he's the man there, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, that was just what my mind immediately went to.
I jumped to like when it's like they're all like, you know, like culturally honor might be really important to them. So it's like he wouldn't want them to throw the fight against him. Not that it's honestly none of that's that important. That's totally just a setup and give a reason for Serrano to kill Chang, which he does. And then Brandon Lee draws that amazing sketch that looks exactly like Nick Mancuso shooting Chang.
Amazing.
Yes.
Amazing stuff.
And yes. I love when the FBI agent tries to grab the notebook and Brandon Lee grabs his hand and twists it and slams it down on the table. And they have to grab him off. That's good stuff, too. Brandon Lee has got some amazing, like, almost like sloppy martial arts stuff going on in this movie and The Crow. Like, he's not that he's like not a good martial artist, like he's obviously very skilled, but just like the way he does things, you can feel like his anger coming through. I think that's what makes him he could have been a great performer, because I was like in The Crow, not to talk about The Crow, but in The Crow there's a scene that's similar where he's killing or trying to kill the first guy that he kills, the black fellow. I forget his name. Anyways, the guy has like a knife and he just grabs the guy's arm and he's like wrestling with him on the ground. And he's like he's like half using his martial arts skill, but half just grappling with the guy. Mm. And it's very like sloppy and feels very like unrehearsed. And I don't know. I think that's really cool. I like that a lot about that movie and this movie. That the fight scenes don't seem, they're choreographed obviously, but they feel like sort of haphazard, especially like in the apartment in Chicago. Like, he throws the forks at the guy, you know, and throws the silverware. I think that's good stuff, man. Really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing like there was an interview with Jackie Chan, and he was talking about how like Bruce Lee was, you know, like super, you know, super hard, super accurate, super, you know, like it's just super all around. Mm-hmm. So Chan's thing was like to do the opposite. Like whenever he hit somebody, he would like shake his hand because it hurt. And, you know, like Brandon Lee's style seems to be like a better like blend of those two, like not as like slapsticky as Jackie Chan's, yeah, but not as, you know, perfection as his dad's. So,
yeah. And there is some like prop fighting like, yeah, Chan would do, like with the forks, and then during the right before he fights Al Lung,
that too,
and when he kicks the door into the guy's face twice and breaks his nose, that's awesome. And but right before he fights Al Lung at the end, he uses the it's like a rack to hang chef's coats,
mm-hmm,
and he uses that to fight them. Like that's very Jackie Chan-ish. How do you guys feel about Lieutenant Mace Ryan and his squad of police officers who work out of a bowling alley?
That was an interesting setup. I was like, what? What? Like, I mean, I guess, you know, they just use any like derelict place that they can get their hands on to set up an undercover, you know, operation. What? But like,
yeah, fair enough. Like, but it's like
a how working bowling alley. Oh, exactly. Like, you know.
Was it working? Did we see the pins get picked up?
No, they had guys working there. Like they had other people bowling there who weren't cops.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the first time we see it.
Yeah, so it's like, what are the cops even? You know, and it's like, and then it paints that last scene that you see where he pulls out his service weapon and shoots one of the bowling pins. It's like, well, you're gonna do that with like civilians in the place? It's completely out of control. I mean, it'd be out of control regardless.
But. You know, like, I don't think we see the civilians again after that first, like, sort of establishing shot.
They were just having a happy civilian day at the bowling alley.
It seems like, I feel like the only person we see bowl again is Mace.
Yeah.
Always missing the single pin.
Right.
And you know what? That's a bit much, but I'm going to go ahead and respect it. You know, his frustration coming out in the bowling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine with it.
I love that. I love that as a like recurring thing, and that resolution of it, of him shooting the pin, is like fun and ridiculous. And I'm fine with it. I just, you know, obviously, like, I think the more ridiculous thing is just the fact that they work in a bowling alley, and it's not explained. They make no attempt to justify it or explain it, which, you know, I don't need a scene. Like, I don't want a scene in this movie where they explain why they're working in a bowling alley, but it is strange.
I mean, in some ways, this movie is like, it has that sort of like late 80s, 90s, like thing that we all imagine that we remember, where it's, you know, like these lean action movies where they weren't going to explain stuff. They weren't going to like really give a shit about how the plot moves. Like we are moving from quality action scene to quality action scene. And
yes.
Yeah, I think that's totally true of this movie, where, you know, that's not true for a ton of others. It's like, if you sit there and you're like, well, why would the FBI protect him by bringing him to Chicago, like, for a trial like this? Like,
he's got to testify in
L.A. Protect him here, far away from the bad guys. It's like, the whole thing is ridiculous. And so, like, when he's set up that way, it's like, it shouldn't be surprising at all. But it doesn't matter, because the fight we get out of it is great.
It's amazing. Yes. And I don't have any issue with that. I don't have any issue with any of these like massive plot holes. The most massive of which is like, what is Brandon Lee's name in this? Jake Lowe. Jake's continued involvement in this makes zero sense. Like the fact, and Mace Ryan insisting, I need you. Like, you don't need him at all. Like, no,
it's ridiculous that you'd even want him. It's,
right.
Like, yeah. he is a complication only.
Exactly. And it's like,
well, that just makes it even better when he was like, you know what? Like, you actually didn't really need to be there in the first place. And he's like, what?
Well, yeah.
You let me get beat up for this?
Would it make more sense for Mace to, like, be interested in following Jake? Because, like, Serrano does want to kill him. Like, Serrano actively wants to kill this kid. And they made it easier by bringing him to Chicago. And we can also explain that by, you know, Serrano paying off feds to get him to Chicago.
Well, they also, I mean, they do follow Jake, right? They put him in a undercover situation and then the bar, whatever.
It's like, why not just like sort of follow without involving him? Let Serrano kind of slip up.
I see. Yeah, maybe.
But this was all about developing the relationship between Mace and Jake. So Mace could come in, you know, right after Jake has sex and just sort of just dump his heart out.
I agree with that. And that's probably the, I don't know what her name is. What's her name?
Carla. Sorry.
Carla. Kate Hodge. I think that's like my least favorite part of the film, that Powers Booth like feels like close to Brandon Lee for some.
I like the kid.
And I'm like, why? Like,
why don't you tell him?
Yeah.
come on, that moment where Jake is like, you don't have to say it.
No, I don't mind that. I like this. I mean, we'll get to that. Let's relax, okay? Let's chill it out. The ending is not bad. But listen, as far as them following him and waiting for Serrano to make a mistake, I mean, Serrano makes a massive mistake on the fucking phone to Raymond Barry. Like, they're not careful at all about their phone conversations. No. You know, did he whack Chet? Did he talking about whacking people? It's like, he killed him, but he missed the other guy. It's like, who would say this on the phone, on a pay phone in the restaurant? You know, that phone is bugged. Like, they have to know that phone is bugged. Every mafia guy's phone at his restaurant is bugged. It's absurd. Why would they be speaking like that? That's a goofy moment.
Yeah. I mean, it should have been like, you know, like, is he sleeping with the fishes or not? You know, kind of thing.
And it probably is like, you know, we're writing this. It's like, we could have the, you know, great mobsters, like they've been successful a long time, act like successful mobsters, or we could keep this movie 90 minutes.
Sure. No, I agree. But I mean, that's not even, I take it back. I don't agree with that. You could still have a tight script. That's just bad writing. That's just like, I don't want to take the time to write my way around this in this dialogue, write my way around this murder that happened. You know what I mean? Like in The Sopranos, there's a ton of that going on. There's a ton of like conversations where like literally nothing is said, but both get parties on the conversation understand exactly what's going on. There's a huge amount of subtext and the audience knows exactly what's going
on. But they felt the need for Booth to have like the leverage over Barry with the recording.
Sure, but the recording is also leverage over Serrano, so it like makes zero sense that they would still put anybody's life in danger to get Serrano at that point.
It's dumb. And
they must know that Serrano is. They must know that he's completely psychotic. I mean, he shotgunned a man to death in front of people. Like,
Serrano probably hasn't pulled the trigger himself in 15 years.
Yeah.
I like that moment. That's a cool idea. I like that. And that's actually, that predates True Romance, where a similar line is said by Christopher Walken. He says, I haven't shot anybody since 1984.
Yeah.
And he's also, so it's interesting. I like that idea of like, he's a top guy, so he hasn't had to kill anybody in a while. Like, that's good. Sorry, I just have a couple of notes to burn through real quick about stuff that happened before where we're at. There's a small blooper that I never noticed before. Jake Lowe gets he's got like a bloody lip during the fight scene in the art gallery thing. And then when he gets to the police station, it's on the wrong side of his mouth. Also, I don't know if you guys noticed this. I didn't notice this until the last time that I watched it, which is when he is in the apartment fighting off the two FBI guys. He jumps into the closet, like he lifts his feet and climbs into the top
part. It's of the a closet. Still image.
Yeah, it's a still image when he's hiding in there. I yeah. never noticed that until the last time I watched it.
I thought I was losing my mind. So it was like 1 a.m. last night. Like, what is happening?
It's like an FX shot. It's weird because I mean, obviously, it's like
the light coming through is moving. Right. Yeah, that was bizarre. Well, it's like, hey, could you like you couldn't just stay still for a second? Like, what's the deal? I guess 5 seconds. You're an athlete.
I don't know what happened, honestly. I feel like it was to keep for like safety reasons, maybe. But then also maybe it was just like he wasn't lit properly in the actual shot, so they just replaced it.
Maybe.
I don't know. Who cares? But and then the clandestine meeting in the dark alley, where yeah. where Raymond Barry tries to get him, but it's like the worst place to have a meet. Like, why would Jake Lowe? It's got to be retarded. Like, he goes to this like complete dark alley with trash blowing in the street to meet this guy after hours. Like, why wouldn't you go to like a public place? You know?
Yeah, especially after all you've been through. Like, you know. Meet me at, you know, the Five and Dime diner, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Just go to, like, maybe at the fucking, you know, the grocery store, a public library or something. I mean, it's like anywhere where there's people.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, Jake is this, like, smart ass, but also just, like, incredibly naive.
And it's got my, that scene has my second favorite Mace Ryan line of the movie, which is, "Hey, I'm a cop, you freeze." It's so good.
You're a slow learner, kid.
Yeah, that's good stuff too.
It is.
Bowers Booth is a blast. he's great.
Like in this role, he's like made for it. Like he knows totally. Exactly what he's doing at all times.
Yeah, it feels like it was written for him.
Yeah.
I like the score of the film during the fight scenes. I hate the blues score of like the cops in the bowling alley.
Same.
It's the worst. It's
loved like, it. Loved it all.
No, you didn't. Oh. It's so bad, dude.
I don't know about you guys, but like when I think about like 90s like action stuff, like in my head it's just dive bombs on whammy bars.
Yeah, totally.
You know.
It reminds me a lot of the speaking of Lethal Weapon, of the Lethal Weapon score, like that Eric Clapton solo thing that happens during that score. It's brutal.
Fucking hate it.
Absolutely terrible. Anyway, sorry. Moving on. So then there's the I think every action scene in this movie is at a minimum solid. Maybe with the exception of that fight in the clandestine alley, which is just a gunfight, and it's sort of goofy, and they're just like, you know, it's one of those classic situations where like the bad guys can't hit shit, and Powers Booth is magically able to hit everybody he shoots at.
We get the two shotgun blasts, makes the car engine explode.
Right, and Brandon Lee gets his first double dual wielding pistol action, and then he's got like the weird slow mo innocent guilty feel. Where he throws the guns.
Never mind that his fingerprints are all over those things now.
Yeah. Again, he's naive. He's not thinking about anything.
That's
but
true.
But in the interrogation back in L.A., it makes a huge point being like, the guy who did it would have had a gun.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because he's like Mr. Anti-Gun Guy for a second.
I don't shoot guns, my guy. But,
I'm pretty sure he had shot a gun
that scene. He grabs that 9mm off the ground and he yells at the girl something. He's just like, "Get out of here." And then he shoots around the corner.
She probably died too. That's the last we saw of her.
Yeah, we don't ever see her again. Which is, again, all that's fine. Like, I don't need to see her or the Asian guy. I mean, and honestly, it makes total sense we don't see her again from multiple reasons. Like, aside from the fact that, you know, they just went through this traumatic gunfight, but also, you know, she was never even into him, right? She was dating the other guy. So why would you see her again? But yeah, that scene when Raymond Barry is sent in undercover to deliver Jake Lowe to Serrano, and I could call him Raymond Barry, but Frank Stewart, you never hear that. Anyways, Raymond Barry,
whatever.
brings him in, and he's got to say, "Nice doing business with you." I love that shit. Nice doing business with you, man. The guy's like, "Yeah, nice doing business with you." And he's just like, the guy who played Nick Mancuso, who plays Serrano, is so out of his fucking mind during.
Why'd you agree to do it for free? Yeah. Why'd you say that?
Yeah.
He's so good.
And then, like, you know, like, repeating the dialogue, like, "Look at you! You're sweating bullets!" You know?
Yeah. You're sweating like a pig. All he wants to do is get out of here in one piece. And I like when he bites his finger. Like, he's got his glove on, and he goes like... It's such a weird performance, but it's over the top, but amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a blast in this, and I love that fight scene. That I like the gunfight thing, like from the street inside. I like all the Brandon Lee shit that's going on in there. The fight with the massive, huge guy that he like caves the ceiling in on his head. Mm-hmm. I like that shotgun and he shoots that guy with it. And he throws the guy. It's just cool. Just really cool, like cause and effect shit going on with the fights. Really nice. Really enjoyed it. Really liked that scene too. And I like when he brings Serrano out and he tells Mace Ryan, he says, "I hear they're looking for a police commissioner in Beirut." Very topical, very on point, you know. He wasn't political, but he'll make a joke about a war. Mm. No?
Yeah. Tiananmen Square was a nightmare. Nothing political about it.
No, not at all.
Well, are you going to get us to the epic sex murder montage?
Yeah, so...
I feel like that's what's next.
Sorry. Definitely. That is my next note, actually, after this one, which is another one of my favorite lines. It almost feels like it's too good to be in here, honestly. It's when the sniper has sights on Serrano and he says, "Serrano's got religion. Give me the word, I'll send him to his maker." Like, that's a good line.
Yeah.
Especially the first part of the line, "He's got religion," that feels like something like code for, like, you know, that they would actually use, you know.
Someone was sitting on that like from way before they started writing this movie.
Totally, right? It's so true. Shit, I just deleted my other note. I don't even know what I had written down. Oh well.
Control Z.
There's no Control Z on my phone. How do you do that on your phone? Well,
the Google Doc does have like a back.
I don't have Google Docs.
I
have
button. I thought it was a Google Doc.
My bad. I have notes. I have notes on my
Jesus Christ.
My Android phone.
You guys
anyway,
are so goddamn unprofessional.
Anyway,
as I open a soda on mic.
Okay, so yeah, I'm to the sex scene now. Okay, so for no other reason other than, you know, gratuitous nudity mixed with gratuitous violence, Brandon Lee sleeps with Kate Hodge.
And, am I an idiot? I am an idiot. I didn't see it coming. Like, I really thought model at the beginning, like, she was our moment of sexy and we're just not going to have that. Like, there was clearly, like, chemistry blooming between Hodge and Lee, but I didn't think that it would be consummated in the way that it was, with them fucking while Powers Booth is sad and Serrano gets murdered.
Yeah, I agree. And I, you know, this was a scene that excited me a great deal when I was a tween and a young teenager reasons you can imagine. But at the same time, I watched it now and I was like, how do they ever jerk off to this, dude? Like, you barely see anything. You know what I mean?
Don't worry about us imagining it.
I know, right? there's nothing going on in this scene. Like, the sex scene is so unsexy. And not only because it's mixed with, you know, a murder and, like, Al Lung's ugly-ass face, but also because, you know, like, you don't know what you're looking at half the time. It's like close-ups of Brandon Lee's ass and her tits, and you don't know what you're seeing, you know? So... I don't know. Well, the music is absolute trash. Doing it.
But to be fair, at that age, you didn't need that much.
No, it's. Know? I mean, I must not have. Honestly, I don't remember, but I do remember.
That's a great ass.
Yeah, exactly. I was just like, I don't even know whose ass that is. It looks good though. It's getting me going.
Was just, oh, yeah. it's, it is that music, the music and the warm lighting, it feels like mm-hmm. we're doing a sexy moment. But who is just like the psycho that was like montage the sexy moment with what they intercut it with? Like, that's
it feels very much a strange choice. Yeah, it feels very much like
again, like a Lethal Weapon
or some other buddy cop sort of movie from the the 5 years before this or 5 years after this, which would do something like that, have this sexy scene mixed in with a montage so they can keep the story going without having to stop it completely to show Brandon Lee's O face.
It's like we want this to be R-rated.
Yes,
we want the dude showing up cocks out and but we gotta keep the story going.
Yeah, it wouldn't be R-rated enough with all the people getting blown away and the F-bombs. We need a quick clip of her tits for 4 seconds,
They're
truly R-rated.
People yell "son of a bitch" so much in this. Like when I think Brandon Lee yells it in the
"son of a bitch."
Yeah, like she's just like, why don't you be quiet and not let them know where you are? And then
adrenaline, man.
In the car, also in the alley fight. I think Powers Booth yells it as they're shooting from behind.
Yeah.
Just a lot of son of a bitch.
Maybe they were trying to, hedge their bets, or like, we could edit this thing down to a PG-13 if we had to. There's a line. So at the end of the movie, and the last ditch effort, they've been pulled off the case and everything, And then the last... Yeah. Who pulls him off the case? Is there a guy who plays like Powers Booth's superior?
I don't remember that.
I don't either.
Somebody
pulls him off though, right? Or they lose funding or something?
Isn't it like just one of the cops in the bowling alley that like tells him?
Oh, just tells him. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
I might be misremembering that, but I feel familiar.
I would believe that. Like the Asian guy, maybe? There's like an Asian member of their crew.
Yeah.
I don't know who, Paul Yang maybe. Anyway, anyways, whenever they go into the laundry at the end, and Jake Lowe disguises himself as a Chinese immigrant, and then he gets stopped by the boss, like one of the crew, and he bows down to him and starts like begging him in Chinese, and he calls him big brother. It just got me. I don't know why. It's like, thank you, big brother. Thank you. I don't know. That's good stuff.
So one thing that I lost again late at night last night. Mm-hmm. How are the drugs working with the sheets?
Yeah, he says the drugs are in the sheets. Like he opens that tube, that hose.
Yeah.
And there's like cocaine pouring out of it. But I don't know. Maybe they're inducing it.
They're starching the sheets with cocaine.
That's what I'm getting from it. I don't know how that helps them, but
I couldn't put it together last night.
And it reminds me, I decided
it didn't matter.
Yeah, it does. It totally doesn't. It reminds me of the scene in Traffic where, after whatever the big kingpin is arrested, Catherine Zeta-Jones goes to sell her idea, the high compacted cocaine. It's like it looks like plastic. It's like in the shape of a doll, and you cook it down in water, and then you evaporate the water, and it becomes cocaine. And I just remember thinking of that, like that's such a better idea. This the sheets, like dogs are gonna smell that. That's not hiding at all. Whatever. It gives us the great line when they capture Mace Ryan. And he's telling him that he's got, cops all over the place. And he says, look, Tal, I'm a cop and you're a piece of shit. That's my absolute favorite line of the movie. Favorite Mace line. So good. So funny. I laughed. I had to pause the movie. I laughed so hard when he said that.
Wow.
Amazing. And then Mace Ryan gets shot down by some random guy, too. It's not even like an important person. He's trying to save Brandon Lee. He jumps through the window with his hands bound. I don't know. All that stuff's good. It works for me. Leads us to the Al Lung fight, which rocks. And then finally, the fight, the big bad fight between Zima, Tao, and Brandon Lee on the elevated train tracks in Chicago. How do you guys feel about that fight? Too short? Not short enough?
No, I was fine with that one, and I enjoyed it.
Mm.
And initially when it started, I had forgotten about the intro, and I was like, this motherfucker can fight too? And I was like, yes, that was like the whole thing. That was like the whole damn thing at the beginning.
Yeah, this movie's gotten, this is tight. There's no flaws here. No holes.
But yeah, because initially, like after kills Al, I was like, so we're just like, we are just going to have like, you know, he chases down and big boss guy gets shot, but we did not. I like a good, you know, train electrocution.
Mm.
And very, you know, very nice train hit. Good train hit.
Yeah, a little unbelievable that he's electrocuted for like 9 seconds and then gets up right away and gets hit by
a train.
Wouldn't it be pretty much fried after that? But I don't know. I don't, whatever. It's fun, you know? It's like fun to get him, see him get more hurt. The main theme is solid. The theme that comes in at the end, I liked a lot. This is just a classic for me. It's just a classic of action cinema from the period. And it's another movie. It doesn't make me as sad as The Crow makes me, that we lost Brandon Lee, but it makes me sad. I think about it whenever I see Brandon Lee in anything, I think about how good he could have been.
Mm.
You know, give him 5 more years. 2 or 3 more movies, like have a really decent little filmography. And instead we've got, you know, we've essentially got 2 movies and this is it. And this is this in The Crow and that's it. That's it. So do you guys, I mean, JR, I mean, we heard Kevin said positive things about Brandon Lee as a performer. What do you think about his acting chops?
Trap. No, I like, he's being asked to be like this, this action star. Like we're doing the post Die Hard, you know, quippy, you know, he's got the one-liners, he's the smart ass.
Yeah.
And I think he's fine. At the beginning, I thought the whole like look of him with his nonchalance and the smart ass stuff while also maybe being an idiot was a bit much, but no, I was down with it, completely down with it by the end.
The jacket and the motorcycle are too much. Like, I made a note about that. I was like, trying a little bit too hard to make him look cool. Like, he doesn't need that. You know, it's a little ridiculous.
Well, it seems like people think he's cool.
Mm.
Or they're just interested in how he's aloof. Or they just want him to say a few words, nothing political, about how Tiananmen Square was a nightmare. We never know.
Anyway, it's having said all that, it's still just a 3.5 and a like for me. I mean, I know I said almost nothing negative about this, but it's just what this movie is. Like, it's not a, I don't think this elevates the form or anything. It's just a great, really solid action movie. And it's not Die Hard. It's not The Crow for me. It's just a good, watchable, good action. Brandon Lee is wonderful to watch. And Powers Booth is a lot of fun. And Nick Mancuso is a lot of fun. So it's a 3.5.
I'm going 4.
Nice.
Whoa.
Yeah. I mean, I would say my biggest beef with the movie is that, like, after the restaurant scene, like, I think it's like, okay, we're kind of dragging this out a little bit. Like, like the restaurant, like if it had happened like more in like the middle and like they had really kind of gotten their asses kicked and then had to like recover more to like bring it to the climax, I think that would have been different.
Yeah.
But like the end for me was kind of like, all right, let's, you know, I know it's only 95 minutes, but y'all are dragging this out.
And I do think that the ending is like all the emotional stuff with him, him and Powers Booth, like, it works because it's so, you know, abbreviated, you know, it's like 30 second sort of dialogue bit between them and then it's over, which is good.
What, Like, what happens next? Is he going back to L.A.? Is he just, like, does he live in Chicago now?
He's got to marry Hodge and and become a cop. He's going to train with the CYPD. No, CPD.
CPD, yeah.
Yeah. I think also, yeah, I thought about that while I was watching this, too. Like, would this movie lend itself to a sequel? Like, would there have been a sequel in 95 or 96, you know? Maybe if he was down on his luck, do a straight-to-video sequel of Rapid Fire.
Mm.
Or maybe like a Lego sequel. Like, if he was still alive today, he was, like, you know, 67, and he does a Lego sequel of Rapid Fire.
Mm.
He would have been... How old would he have been?
I don't know.
Was this movie successful? Like, did people go see this?
That is a wonderful question. I have no idea.
He would be 59 today.
Mm.
Wow. Rapid Fire made $14 million in the U.S.
And not great.
There's no budget listed. I can't imagine this cost more than 6 or 7, though, honestly. It seems like a pretty, you know, low tier, low budget. Not low budget. You know, not super, not metal even. Who knows?
I rated it a 3.5 as well. Sorry.
Nice. That's fine. I cut you off. That's my fault. All right. Well, good. Let's do the thing that we always do, which is called Letterboxd Roulette. And if it's Brandon Lee, I think I'll win. But otherwise... So Brandon Lee, Powers Booth, Nick Mancuso, who is in other stuff, Raymond J. Barry, who's in a lot of other stuff.
Mm.
Kate Hodge is in like 4 things. Yikes. We won't use her. And
Zima's
let's do Zima. Okay. So we'll just do, well, I'll tell you what, we'll do those, 5. Yeah.
Mm.
So let me just get a 5-sided die. Here we go. You ready? Rolling. And it's Powers Booth.
All right.
The man, the myth, the legend. I think JR's got this one in the bag. Because I have not seen the Avengers film, which he is in for some reason.
Mm.
Weird.
I've also not seen MacGruber. That seems like something JR would have seen.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah, see.
I saw that too.
I mean, but I've never seen Red Dawn or Sin City, A Dame to Kill For, or Nixon.
Or Cruising? Really? You've never seen Cruising?
Uh-uh.
What about U-Turn?
Nope.
Oh, wow.
Oliver Stone sucks.
You must have
Oliver Stone must have rules.
You must have seen The Goodbye Girl, right?
I have seen that.
Okay.
You never seen Nixon?
No.
Bro.
Isn't it like 7 hours?
No, it's not 7 hours.
It's 3 hours and 12 minutes, which might as well be 7 hours.
That's a good movie, man. I like Nixon. I thought Popkins was a really... it seems like a weird choice, but he does a pretty good job, as I recall. It's been a long time. Anyway. Okay, well, my number's 10.
My number is 10.
Okay, well, uh-oh. After all that, my number's 11. Oh,
yeah. You fucking... jerk.
He saw Men of Honor and Frailty
and Hatfields and McCoy.
Neither of those. No, I wonder if this Lili Sobieski Joan of Arc is a TV movie, but
it is.
Mm.
Seen that.
Well, it doesn't count. You can't count that. So 10.
Shit.
I'm just kidding. You can count it. I'm just kidding. Have you seen it? You haven't seen Emerald Forest?
I have seen that.
Yeah, and I've seen that too.
I've seen Extreme Prejudice. But yeah, it seems like I haven't seen more than you guys, but I have seen one more than you guys.
I think we've all seen sort of like different ones. You saw Sudden Death though too, see? So.
Yeah, Sudden Death's great. Yeah.
Sudden Death is not great, but I mean, you know, this is not a rapid fire type classic
Rapid
action
Fire
film.
Is better than Sudden Death.
Yes it is. You haven't seen Red Dawn? That's pretty bizarre.
It is a little bizarre. Yeah, man, I think it sounds really stupid.
I mean, it's not smart, but it's like, it's sort of just like a movie I thought everybody saw, you know?
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
I watched this movie a lot when I was a kid also. This was a big one for me.
Yeah, my brother and I watched Red Dawn a lot as well. And like, we watched it again a few years ago now. And watching it again, I was like, oh no, oh no.
Didn't work for you, huh?
It is so modern,
conservative libertarian jerk off fest.
Yeah, I know that. I knew that it was like, because I watched.
Doesn't sound surprising.
When you watch the Milius documentary, they talk about that like it's, you know, sort of like people in Hollywood didn't like it because it was very right wing.
Yeah.
Rah America sort of stuff, but.
Yeah.
Well, I was more of a Road Warrior guy than Red Dawn.
Yeah, I liked them both. Is better than Red Dawn. I liked them both when I was. I haven't seen Red Dawn since I was a kid, so I have no idea how it'll hold up. But anyways, okay, so it seems pretty obvious that Kevin and I are watching movie number 888 on our list, which is
something 3 hours.
Oh. Hang on. How did I do that? Bro.
What'd you break?
I don't know what I broke. Oh, that's my problem. Sorry. Sorry. Okay, we're good. Oh, no, not that one. Oh. Getting there. It's 8. Oh, I gotta do 9. Hang on. Oh. I forgot. It's always the page after. Yeah. So 888 is... It's Asian. Oh, it's Good Morning, Ozu.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Okay with this?
I'm fine with that.
It's okay, a shorter Ozu one.
Yeah, I've never seen this, and I've heard good things. And, you know, Ozu's not my favorite, but I'll definitely watch this.
Yeah.
I'll watch this for sure, unlike... Royal Space Force, which I did not watch, even though I was supposed to, and I spent bandwidth and time downloading it, and I did watch the first, I'll say, 8 minutes, and I was going to, like, I had to stop. I wasn't, like, bored or anything. I was just like, I can't watch this anymore right now, and I stopped it, and I never went back to it because I just didn't have, it's actually, you know, I mean, that's sort of a cop. I definitely could have found time, probably. Like, instead of watching Showdown in Little Tokyo. But I wanted to watch Showdown in Little Tokyo. I don't know. It's hard to... Showdown in Little Tokyo is 79 minutes long.
Ooh.
It's just that, like...
I mean...
You got to.
Between that and... 2 hours.
Yeah.
121 minutes.
But anyways, Kevin, did you watch this movie?
I did. I watched Royal Space Force, The Wings of Hanayamise. And it wasn't a total slog, but it was very, it just got boring because it just kept going on and like things that weren't very interesting were happening. And then things that were like kind of came out of nowhere, like, so it's about this guy who's like has no direction in life. He wanted to fly, he wanted to join the Navy so he could fly fighter planes, but he wasn't good enough to do that, so he joined the Space Force. And the Space Force is not really a thing, it's more of a joke, and people don't really know why it's there, and people think it should be shut down because it's draining money from other resources. But as it goes on, like, they're trying to make it a thing. And, like, there's a corrupt government that's trying to, like, really make it a thing to, like, boost themselves. And the main guy is going through it, and he's... Like, he meets this woman who's, like, handing out leaflets of, like, you know, the end is coming, repent now. And he like gradually like has sort of a romance with her, but then there's like this weird point in the movie where he's like like, she's, like, down on her luck, and, like, her, like, house has been, like, repossessed or something, and then, like, he, like, tries to force himself on her, and eventually he's, you know, like, he stops, he's like, you know, what am I doing? And then, like, the next morning, she acts like nothing happens, and, like, the whole thing just sort of becomes inconsequential. So, yeah, it was...
Is there any good action in it?
Not really.
No? I see, I thought it was going to be like a Gundam type, or like a, you know, what's that other one called? The RoboCop? No, not RoboCop. Robotech? Something like that, you know? Pat Labor, the police, you know, something like that, you know?
Yeah, no, unfortunately it has nothing to do with mechas or anything like that.
Just stupid. Well, yeah. I mean, my memory of this is that it commits the sin of, like, being a two-hour anime that ultimately is just boring. And according to Wikipedia, my ongoing, in this exact moment, Wikipedia research, apparently at the time this was the most expensive anime film ever produced, which is like, that's a bummer. But
like, yeah,
it's like a boring, like, nothing.
I mean, well, you know,
it did not do well.
I can't say I'm surprised, because I mean, like, you know, Akira is a movie that gets talked about a lot, and I'm sure plenty of people are like, there's more to anime than Akira, you know, like, there's this and there's that. But, like, when you really get right down to it, like, it's worth the hype. It still looks amazing, you know, 40 years on. It's interesting. It's well acted. The score is great. Like, you know, yes, obviously there is more to anime than just that, but, like, it's worth your attention, and it's worth the praise that it gets. So, sorry.
Yeah, it's like The Godfather. It's like, yeah, The Godfather is super hyped, but it's like, it's because it's good, you know?
Yeah.
Apparently in 1999, in an issue of Time, in like a sort of outline history of anime, Richard Corliss marked the release of this movie in 1987 as like the moment that the anime officially became an art form. I was like, I don't know about that.
No.
That's a pretty hardcore reappraisal of a failure, and that's fine. We do that all the time, but it's wild to, like, think that this is what made it art, not.
Yeah, sounds like a hero
Castle
answer.
In the Sky or the Kira, yeah. Nausicaa, anything that other people were doing cool stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, whatever.
I mean, Speed Racer, the television show? Come on.
Lupin?
Yeah, Lupin's great.
Yeah.
All right.
Moving on.
Yeah.
It's a dud, guys. It's a dud.
I guess, JR, you want to say what you watched?
I was able to get home a little bit early from work today. It was a non-contact day. And I had an hour left of the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. And also a dud. Waste of time. Guy Ritchie's war movie from earlier this year with, you know, just a huge cast of people like Superman.
Henry Cavill.
Yeah, Henry Cavill.
You watched this because of Jack Reacher, right?
No, I watched it because of Guy Ritchie.
But you like the Jack Reacher guy, right?
I did not realize that Alan Ritchson was in this.
Oh.
And, like, Henry Golding is in it. Like, and these are people like Isaac Gonzalez, Cary Elwes, who was, like, in all of the recent Guy Ritchie movies.
Yes.
Alex Pettifer, who hasn't acted since, like, 2009 or something. I don't know what he's been doing. I'm sure he has. I just haven't seen. He's, like, a teen heartthrob who is now more grizzled. But this is like, this is kind of like the gung-ho war crap for World War II. And, you know, Ian Fleming is a character who's like one of the people like sending them into their black ops operation. But like all of these people are superheroes. Like calling Cavill Superman in this makes sense. Like he, for the most part, is just wielding a gun and never misses and is really smart. But like Reacher is a guy who can like shoot a bow, like an arrow through multiple people and like, you know, like stick them all like to the wall. Henry Golding and just like Henry Golding disappears for so much of the movie because he's apparently just like swimming miles and miles underwater to set explosives. Every once in a while, he just like pops up from water and then something blows up and you're like, where the fuck has he been? Like, when did we make this plan? And then like, it also is like just this dumb thing like Isaac Gonzalez, who also seems very capable and smart and she can fight. But she gets like put into like the stupid like play the sexy distraction and, you know, then get captured thing. And it's just like, oh, my God. And there's like half an hour, 45 minutes in where my brain was just like they're just like talking. Like we're just talking about what's going to happen. And then it happened. I was losing it. It's falling asleep. Just poorly structured, predictable, you know, jingoistic nonsense.
Yeah, this movie wasn't good. I agree, but I did like some of the action sequences were like mildly amusing. I thought. Some of the, I don't know, just people shot the arrows. Kind of fun. I don't know.
So I liked like the opening scene on the boat when mm-hmm. like you don't really know what's going on. And then Cavill just starts like laughing.
Right.
And Richardson starts laughing. And then like he just stabs everyone. And like there's blood everywhere. Like that was surprising. But then like he has a bow, but he just like fights the same the whole time.
No, I agree. Yeah.
And Cavill just walks around with his silenced machine gun, just like bop 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 bop. Like I never miss. I'm smart. I'm cool. And just it got old.
It's very like John Wick-ish. Like John Wick, the reach of John Wick. This is what it is. It's like making your hero into like a machine of killing. Like yeah. He can't miss. He never gets in trouble. Really, people around him get in trouble, but he doesn't get in trouble.
But Cavill has to be. He's also so charming,
sure. Right?
Because the text at the end tells us that this is likely who Ian Fleming based Bond on,
right? Which is also really like the Bond connection is super lame and unnecessary. But yeah, I thought it's too long. Probably is its biggest problem, and it could just be pared down and might be more. Enjoyable as a Guys, sort of short action thing.
Guy Ritchie, should I give up?
Hey, I would. Okay. Well, do you want to talk Rebel Ridge?
Sure, man.
Okay. This is the latest Jeremy Saulnier movie. His second movie for Netflix after Hold the Dark, which is a thousand years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 2018. So he hasn't made a film since then. He made some TV, directed True Detective, and I feel like something else, but I don't know. And yeah, this movie is about a guy who is a Marine or was a Marine, and he's just, you know, he's just trying to get his cousin out of prison, trying to bail him out and buy a truck and become a fisherman. And the local cops, who are not outwardly so, but obviously racist, they run him over with their car at the beginning and then take all of his money and steal it legally by seizing it. And the whole movie's about him trying to get that money back. And for me, boy, it didn't work for me. Bit of a slog, this one. some like interesting, like when there is action, especially that first scene where you see him do something, where he takes Don Johnson's gun and he holds.
What's the acronym?
Shit, I don't even remember.
Excite or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's something like that.
I think it was four letters.
I don't see. Okay, well, speaking of that, I don't like that. That doesn't do anything for me. The dialogue stuff, that scene where they're trying to restart the internet to check him out and they can't figure out who he is. And like, it's an interesting, I understand it's like trying to build suspense and everything, but it's like, it just feels very like contrived and ridiculous, you know?
So I agree. And that was like one of the only moments in the movie where I thought like, they're like trying to do the badass action dialogue. Like otherwise they don't do that. And that is not typically who this character is.
No, I agree.
I understand. It's like the closest that we see him get to like anger, like where he's like,
he rages the appearance that he's going to, he gets demonstrative a couple of times and screams like at the really weird moments too. Like
that's usually like on a come down, like
right.
He escapes being killed and then screams.
I just feel like those kinds of things, Saulnier, I guess I just don't understand him as a filmmaker. I thought I did, but like that seems like something that he's like striving to get some sort of real emotion in there. Like what you just said, it's like this, he's coming down from this traumatic event and he's releasing an emotional wail, right? But it's like, it just doesn't seem like it fits in this movie at all to me. This movie feels very like way lower than that and like does not need that sort of attention to realism. You know, it's just like such a goofy premise. Like it's the idea that this guy wants the money back, the way he goes about doing it is so outlandish and foolish. And
you know, well, it's not the first thing he tries.
Yeah. The fact that he tries it at all, I mean, is he insane? I mean, you know, I don't...
Because, the whole thing is based on, like, the desperation of him knowing that his cousin is going to be attacked and killed when he gets to the larger prison.
Right. But it's like, at one point he goes and... I can't remember. I think it's the girl, Anna Sophia Robb's character, the... whatever she is, the paralegal or something. Summer McBride. Ugh. Anyway, she asks him something like, are you trying to get like arrested so you can go to prison with him? And I was like, no, that's an interesting idea. Like if he tried to go to prison and like protect him from the inside, but that's not his plan, is to go get the money. He, in order to do that, he's got to like essentially break into the police station and hold everybody hostage, take the money, go bail out his cousin somehow before they get to the courthouse and stop him, right? Which does not work, obviously, because they stop him.
You know? Did seem like he had accepted that he was going to prison regardless of
So then what's the point? I you know what I mean? It's just like, it's to save his cousin's life, sure. But it's like, I don't know. We don't know the cousin. Like, I don't buy that this guy cares that much about his cousin. Not that I need a, because in a lesser film, because this isn't like a piece of shit or anything. It's like in a piece of shit film, you'd have a scene, like a flashback of them playing as kids together or something, you know, to show you that they're really close. I don't need that. But I mean, like, I guess I just don't care. Like, all I wanted to see was him in a First Blood scenario with the cops, you know, painted this like it's First Blood. I wanted it to be First Blood. And that's my fault. Maybe it's just,
that's something that I just can't relate to. Like it's set up like First Blood. Yes. But then it like, it has different aims. Cause like there is this legal thriller part of it with the civil asset forfeiture. And they're going to make sure that we understand what that is and why it matters and why it sucks.
Yeah. And that's the problem. Like the whole thing gets way too plot heavy. It's like suddenly he's involved in all these like legal things, and he's got to talk to Summer, and then Summer's got a drug problem, and then the cops are fucking with her too, and it's like, now it's personal. And it's just like, I can't, it's just way too convoluted and silly for me.
It is convoluted, but I thought the convolutions, I thought it worked. Like, I thought the way that the law enforcement sort of like switch gears and go back and forth, like, mm-hmm. I liked that they realized, like, after that initial thing when they're like all like disarmed and they are defeated, like, they're not just like, we're gonna go kill this guy. They like come up with a plan to get him out of town. They don't want him digging into anything. They don't want this guy around.
Right.
And they're going to like fix, they're going to try and fix the cousin thing. Cause they also realize like what he said was right. Like, this guy is going to go get killed. And of course he's like attacked immediately. I liked all that stuff. I thought it was smart to set it up like First Blood and then do something different.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I feel like
If it really was just First Blood, we'd right. all be like, okay, we've seen First Blood.
First Blood's a masterpiece. I can't...
First Blood's great.
Yeah, I don't want to remake a First Blood. I just thought it was going to be more of a him versus the cops physically, I guess, you know, which it is not at all. It's like, it's him versus the cops physically twice. And those scenes are short, and they're... Honestly, the last action sequence, I like kind of hate. I thought it was like poorly. Really? Yeah, I did not like it at all. Like, I just felt like it was just like really, it's just so absurd. I don't buy any of it. Like, the fact that he's running around, he's protecting this downed officer. He's nursing his wound.
Yeah, the downed officer.
Gas every 5 seconds, and then he's throwing the gun down, and he's doing this other thing, and he's running around, and he's hitting some guy, and then he's coming back to the downed officer, and then he's firing more tear gas.
He knows that the downed officer is legal protection for the next step, right? Because, like,
yeah, of course,
he's the informant, even though he's also the one who hit him with a car in the beginning. Like, this guy's not a good guy at all.
No, he's a great guy at that moment. That's a total transformation. David Denman becomes one of the supernatural aids to our hero that moment.
And it, you know, and of course, like, I don't know. There's the things I like. I thought that scene was like messy, and mm-hmm. I liked it because it's a bunch of like hick ass cops who, like, you know, they're just like they're firing these military grade weapons that they don't actually use. They don't know how to use these things well. And, you know, this guy like has actual training, but like it shouldn't be clean, and it's not clean. I don't know. I liked it. I just like this movie.
Different strokes, man. Different strokes.
Thought a lot of this movie was smart. I still like eye rolled at points. I definitely like some of the Anna Sophia Robb stuff. It's too much.
See, I can't take her in this. Her accent is ridiculous. I can't take the Southern thing. Like, I also don't like, why is this movie set in Louisiana? Why are we set here? Why are there people with accents all over the place? Everything's in a bayou, or there's fucking mosquitoes everywhere. It's absolutely ridiculous.
No. So it's like, but if you're gonna get the tax break for filming in Louisiana, like, why not just set it in Louisiana? Because like, it's clearly like filmed in rural Louisiana.
Yeah,
it's just like, we're not fighting it. I liked that not everybody had a stupid ass accent, like, thank God.
No, I agree with that,
but like, too many people did.
Yes, especially that girl.
Hey, they got it right. They called them parishes, not counties.
That's true. You know? I mean, they'd be pretty dumb not to know that. But hey, I got a question though. Okay, you gave this movie 4, right?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, and you gave Green Room 4. Which
Green
one's
better?
Okay.
Calm down.
You're all right. Green Room is literally twice the movie this movie is for me, because I gave this a 2.5 and I gave Green Room a 5. So,
I mean, I've seen 3 of his movies, and this is probably the worst that I've seen. Like, I think I like Blue Ruin more as well.
You never saw Hold the Dark?
No, you guys said it was awful.
Yeah, it's not good. Well, actually, I give it the same rating as this movie, so you know, well, maybe you'd love it. I don't know.
I thought Blue Ruin was great.
Blue Ruin is great.
I don't remember hearing anything good about Hold the Dark.
It's not good.
It's also longer than 2 hours. That sounds like a tough sell.
How about Murder Party? Kevin's seen Murder Party for some reason.
It was terrible. I saw it because it was on Netflix and it had Saulnier's name on it.
Oh. Yeah, it looks really bad. I don't know.
Does McCone and Blair still work?
Macon?
McCone? Oh, yeah, I guess it's Macon, Georgia.
Yeah, he was in Oppenheimer.
Yeah, he's
what?
He was in the Florida Project also.
What the fuck?
I mean, that was a while ago, I guess, but. Yeah. Also, my brother's friend Charlie is in Rebel Ridge apparently.
Hmm.
As
is he one of the cops?
No, he's teacher. I don't even know what that means. Like, I don't remember there being a teacher in the movie, but he plays teacher. So I don't remember seeing him. So
yeah. So Sophia Robb, thinking that she's about to have to leave town, goes to her daughter's school, and so. Teacher is probably one of the people that approaches her at the gate and is like,
oh, okay,
you have to call us before you come. You're not allowed to be here.
Oh, right. She goes to the fence, right, and sees her like playing.
She's not allowed to contact her kid.
Because she's a hophead.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay. Sorry, Kevin.
Sorry for spoiling that entire movie, Kevin.
Yeah, fuck that movie.
No, I'm not going to watch it. So I went to the Dolby Theater to see Shaun of the Dead for its 20th anniversary.
Nice.
And like now I've seen all of the Cornetto films in the theater. And Shaun of the Dead is still great. Easily the best zombie movie there is. I know, you know, there are people out there who are going to be like, how dare you? But like, no, give me a break. Shaun of the Dead is the best.
It's good.
Yeah, the shots, the parallel structures, like, you know, like there's that one shot where he's like going to the corner store in the morning and then the next day it's like the exact same shot, but it's like the world has collapsed. And like I had, you know, I've seen this movie a number of times, but like just seeing how like, you know, this was like, I mean, Simon Pegg had done acting before, like he'd been in some TV shows. Spaced. But I think this, yeah, Spaced. There's another one, Asylum, I want to say. Anyway, like his, like the way he's able to pull off all these emotions as someone who, like, you know, hasn't been acting for like a long time, he's just so great.
Yeah, he's wonderful. I like this movie a lot too. I saw this movie on a whim in 04. At City Place.
Oh.
And when City Place was still City Place. And yeah, it was just like completely shockingly good and funny. I had no idea what I was in for, and it was great.
Come on, what were you doing? I also saw this in a theater and had no idea what I was walking into when I did, and I loved it.
Yeah, I think we must have gotten it from like Blockbuster or something, because like I remember, you know, I had heard about it, and but yeah, I don't know. At that time, I wasn't seeing a lot of stuff in the theater, so it's just, you know, one of those things. But yeah,
all right, cool, man. I need to see The World's End in the theater in order to see all the Cornetto movies in the theater. So if that's ever coming back out and playing, let me know. I'll go see it with
sure.
you.
Sure. Well, I mean, this was a 20-year thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Shaun so it'd be
so 2033, right? We'll go see the world's end.
In 4 years, hopefully we'll be able to see Hot Fuzz again.
Yeah, Hot Fuzz was I remember not, was it 07? Not liking it at all. But
really?
Yeah, I hated Hot Fuzz.
I do not remember that. I remember liking it a great deal.
Hey, a lot of people did. It didn't work for me. Maybe it would now. I don't know. It's been a long time, but I remember just like coming off of Shaun of the Dead and being like, Shaun of the Dead is like the best. It's so fucking funny and so good and so violent. And then I remember that being a specific problem. Like, Hot Fuzz is not nearly as, like, it doesn't have any gore in it, you know? It's like people getting blown away or anything like that. Not really, anyway. I mean, there's some action, but it's not, like, a ton, you know? It's not, like, it's not as violent as Shaun of the Dead, obviously.
I mean, I would take exception to that, because there's a there's a piece of a cathedral that comes down and literally, like, lands right on top of guys.
Okay.
Buries itself in his torso.
Sure, that's and not the, what I'm referring to, with, though.
Okay.
I'm referring to, like,
that's where the first Omen stole that from.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm referring to gunshot fire, wounds, people getting their brains blown out, things like this. You know,
see a lot of dead bodies.
That's what I wanted to see, because Hot Fuzz, in all the commercials, it's like them jumping around with guns and talking about double guns and shotguns. And I was like, this is going to be great. And there's like not a lot of that in the movie. So, but I mean, again, that's just a preconceived notion that affected my feelings about it at the time. Might not be the case now.
Well, I think if you watch it now, I think like when those shooting scenes actually happen, I think you'll realize that, like, okay, I realize why now.
Yeah. Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I'm definitely more...
What is your why? Remember your why.
Right. Mm. I'm definitely more sophisticated as a movie watcher now than I was when I was 22, 23. Same. Okay, JR?
Okay, I watched The Deliverance. I was basically forced to watch this by my friends. Not really forced, but they were like... having a conversation, they were like, you have to watch this, because they both hated it, and we like to spread negativity as a race, you know, as like a human race. So I watched it, and I thought it was really bad. I hated it. This is a Lee Daniels movie about like a haunting and possession thing that supposedly happened somewhere in like, I think Pittsburgh. Yeah, it's Pittsburgh. Where this woman who is like, she is an alcoholic, and she is like actually abusing her children physically. You know, claim that all three of her kids, you know, aged like 17 down to like 10 probably. Were possessed by something that was haunting this like new house that they moved into, and it was it's just a lot. It's just like a tonal kind of nightmare. And Andra Day, who is this mother, is just like, she is being asked to like go back and forth so much in ways that I just don't think benefit a character at all when we're trying to like establish what's going on in a horror movie. And then it feels like this is a Netflix movie, so I don't think this is the case, but it feels like this movie was like chopped up, where it's like sometimes that like she'll talk about things, they'll like talk about these bad things that happened to the kids, but like the movie didn't show us that or show us any like fallout from this thing that happened. So like all of a sudden they're using like reactionary dialogue from something that happened in the past to like ramp up the tension in a horror movie, and just like did not make any sense to me at all. That like that is not a way to make me feel more scared. It's a way to make me think that you don't know how to put together a movie. And you know, Glenn Close is Andra Day's mother, and this is just it is wild, this turn that she does. But so like this is just sort of like a, like, I'm not going to blame the performers for this. I think this is just, like, shoddily written and executed. And I keep getting fed, like, Instagram content now that I've watched it. And, like, Google stuff. It's, like, all these articles about how, like, Lee Daniels and the cast are, like, praying on set every day. And it's, like, please, I don't want to read about how they're fucking praying on set. I don't like that. That's awful. And this is also just very clearly an exorcism movie. Because Anjanae Ellis Taylor plays this character who just sort of like starts sitting in her car outside of this family's house, just kind of watching them. And they're all, every once in a while, they're like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, go away. They think she's like with Child Protective Services, but she's just like around. And then she finally reveals that she is a pastor and she does deliverances or something. Not exorcism. She says not exorcism, probably for legal reasons. she does not perform exorcism. She delivers these people from possessions or something. But they make sure to explain that a bunch of times because not an exorcism movie. But yeah.
Nice.
It's bad. It's bad. You guys should watch it. I should make you promise to watch this.
I'm good.
Hell no.
The film junk guys loved it, and I don't know what the fuck was going on.
I don't think they loved it. They said they liked the first like hour of it, and then it fell apart at the end, right? So
they did. Because it becomes an exorcism movie that isn't an exorcism movie.
In fact, Jay, just the episode before they reviewed it, he said, he was like, I'm 1,000% done with exorcism movies. They're the worst. Like, there's no, they, you know, and then they watched this and they were like, yeah, it's not too bad. You know,
because it's not an exorcism movie. Don't call it an exorcism movie. They prayed on set.
Yeah, exactly.
They prayed on set. Right. Thank you, Instagram.
Okay. Do you want to talk Quiet Place Day One? Even though it's been a month since you watched it?
Sure.
Okay. So this movie is the new Quiet Place prequel about the first day that the sound-hearing aliens arrive on Earth.
And I take issue with this description.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
This is the new Michael Sarnowski film.
Oh, right. Michael Sarnowski.
Director of Pig.
Yeah, he's not a director we're looking at anymore, is he? I mean, after this, like, oh, yeah. Are we done with Sarnowski? Like I guess you like this more than I did, but he shit the bed with this one for me. This is one of the worst movies I've seen of the year. It stars Lupita Nyong'o as Samira, a woman who is in hospice care because she's dying of something. I don't think they say what she's dying of, right?
She seems to be like in a cancer ward, but
yeah, I mean, I assume it was cancer, but I don't think they say anything about that. Anyway, she's on fentanyl because of the pain. Some, you know, unnamed pain that's happening in her. Her body's on fire, I think she says at one point. And then these things attack while they're in New York City one day, watching like a 4-minute. Sequence of a Muppet show for some fucking reason, because Sarnowski has to be like, this is an art film, we're gonna watch this guy do Muppet fucking puppeteering for 4 solid fucking minutes and watch Nyong'o have an emotional experience with this. For what reason, who knows? Why is she emotional during this moment? Nobody knows. You never find out. Her father wasn't a puppeteer, he was a jazz pianist. So God only knows why she's crying during this fucking puppet show. Anyway, then the things attack, of course, and everybody dies except for her and this Wall Street Ireland guy.
Basically everyone who was in the puppet show.
Yeah, yeah. and this is my big issue with the film, okay, is that I don't know. I didn't watch the Quiet Place movies. I don't know anything about them. I mean, that's not true. I know a lot about them, but I didn't watch them. And, but God, if these people do not adapt way too quickly to this situation, like she gets knocked out in like a car accident, like a car falls on top of her or something. And then she wakes up in a church and there's 150 people in this church and they're all being dead quiet.
Yeah.
Give me a fucking break. People are morons.
Juman Hanzu figured this shit out real fast.
Yeah, right. I mean, even if the whole world knew, you could make a broadcast to everybody in the world. These things, they hear you, they kill you. You'd still have people are morons. They cannot control themselves.
Well, and that's, you know,
they'd be whispering too loudly. Stuff would be happening, and this church would be overrun with these things. And they would all be murdered. I actually took notes on this one because it was upsetting me. Like, they adapt way too quickly. They would never be able to remain as quiet as they do. It's absurd. There's also, like, no, like, the noises, it's always, like, them knocking something over or like, you know, speaking when they shouldn't be speaking or like crying or like coughing. It's never like, how about the fact that there's, you know, broken glass literally everywhere?
Yeah.
So how are they possibly not setting this up? They're walking with shoes on too. No, Joseph Quinn never takes his shoes off. Why would you be walking with shoes? Hard soles on the concrete? Are you fucking insane?
Yeah, I would have stolen someone's tennis shoes, but I wouldn't go barefoot because then you're stepping on glass and screaming. Sure. You know, no one ever farts.
That's so good, dude. Yeah, exactly.
And no one, and like the cat never makes a sound, which is,
it's insane. That's insane. The fact that there is a cat is just upsetting.
So, I felt a lot differently about this movie because I think it's great. I don't think it is great. I thought it was like lean and just kind of entertaining. Like I enjoyed the gimmick, and I enjoyed the first Quiet Place movie for the same reasons. And I also like that this, even though you're able to complain about like all this sort of like schmaltzy bullshit, Jim Halpert, what's his name?
John Krasinski.
Oh, sorry. No, like the writer and director of the first one,
mm-hmm.
And star, like he just lays like everything on just like so goddamn thick that I thought this was like a relief. You know, it's like, yes, we have sort of like our sob story with Samira Lupita Nyong'o's character, but we aren't subjected to like all the other bullshit that I think drags down the other Quiet Place movies. It's so heavy on family. Families are emotional, I get it, but it's too much. And I just kind of liked going through the city, and like I'm able to sort of just like turn off how dumb it is while still acknowledging that it's so dumb. And like, you know, you can get mad at Cernowski for like, he basically has like the parade of people shuffling like south to get to the water, like all the same time. Well, it's like, that's obviously nothing more than just like a like sad image, you know, like reminds me of like, it doesn't look like something in The Mist, but it feels like something in The Mist where like these dejected, broken people all move together. But you know, those people are all dying and getting attacked in a second.
Yeah.
But the fact that they weren't just immediately all attacked is dumb. I get it.
Well, okay. This is the problem with Cernowski, though, right? The movie's lean. I agree with that. But it could easily be shorter. Like, you could cut out the emotion. We don't need the emotional stuff. We don't need the sad stuff. We don't need any of that. Like, it's like that scene. Honestly, it doesn't.
I'm okay with giving, but like, I'm okay with giving Lupita Nyong'o like the destination. Like, she needs to get to this place.
100%.
Pizza place. I'm cool.
Oh, with no, that. Oh, no, I'm not. Never. You're mind. Not. I thought you meant the dock.
No.
To get to the boat. Yes. To get to the pizza place.
She's dying. Like, she doesn't need to get to the boat.
No, I know that, but that feels contrived. Like, the idea that it's like, well, okay, let's have a character who doesn't actually care about surviving.
But to
survive, which is totally ridiculous and unnecessary, that she wants to get pizza. And then, I'm sorry, how on earth do they get pizza?
I thought it was just days old shitty pizza.
There's a days old pizza just sitting somewhere. Like, why would that be there?
Well, I mean, like in like a pizza restaurant, like everything ended like all at once, right? And like the monsters aren't going to eat the pizza. I just assume like someone's pizza didn't get picked up for delivery.
So they're eating like what, 4 day old pizza?
Yeah. I do that in my home.
Which hasn't been refrigerated. It hasn't been refrigerated.
Nah, again, she's dying anyway. She doesn't care.
Okay, Joseph Quinn's not dying, but he's going to have massive diarrhea on that boat, though, and I feel bad for him.
Yeah. Look, Lupita Nyong'o she has to die because she's not in A Quiet Place 2. which is where we see other people besides like just the I forgot his name again, Krasinski family.
Yeah.
Including Juman Hanzu. He like
Oh really? I didn't know that. This
yeah, he connection. Like that on that boat, they're like going to an island, he sets up like a little colony
that we end up seeing. Yeah, I don't know, man. The whole
quiet colony.
Yeah, the whole whatever you would call it, the sort of narrative of the world. I it doesn't make any sense to me, but yeah. It's like, just silly conceit. But I mean,
feel confident that if I put this on again, the score would go down.
Yeah, so I think Sarnowski's carrying a lot of that score for you, and I think if you watch Pig again, it might go down because Pig is not
good for it being. No, that's dumb. That sounds dumb. But they, like in I remember being super disappointed when Sarnowski signed on to do this. Like that's definitely not. It's not a franchise I care for. I don't want him to mess with this.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. That might be.
Well,
might
it's be like. You know who was attached to two, right? Was or maybe it was this. It was what's
Jeff,
this?
Jeff Nichols.
And Nichols, right? Yeah. Which might have he might have been a better choice for this because I didn't like Bike Riders either. So
he said I listened. He talked a little bit about this on a podcast where he's like, yeah, I was writing these drafts and they just kept asking me to change certain things to kind of make it fit what they wanted, and is like. You know, I ended up just kind of feeling like, you know, we worked on this, couldn't really come to an agreement, and I don't need to, like, have any, like, ill will toward the project. I'm just like, we see it going a different direction, so I'm taking off.
Fair enough. Although, I mean, you know, again, Nichols, I don't know. I'm not impressed by Nichols anymore. I'm hoping I'll put back maybe something interesting.
Yeah, it's so curious. Yeah, he took a lot of time... Not off. It sounds like he was trying to get projects off the ground, but I get like, you know, his brother gave him this book, like the Bike Riders book. Mm-hmm. He wants to like, it's been like a whole thing that he's wanted for decades. Maybe now that that's done, we'll get back to something more interesting. Who knows?
Hopefully. Kevin?
I'm out.
I am also out, JR.
I'm gonna comment. I watched. I watched the new Criterion, or rented the new Criterion of Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, and watched the final preview cut, which I was definitely not the cut I'd seen before. But I don't remember the cut well enough that I saw years ago to compare the two. I just thought Pat Garrett and Billy Kid was really good. I thought I liked it. And I watched another Western called Horizon, an American Saga, Chapter 1. Mm-hmm. And I thought Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid was way better than that.
Okay, but you didn't dislike Horizon, right?
No, but I definitely disliked parts of Horizon, and I wish that I had taken notes, watched that over 2 weeks ago. I don't think I needed them to introduce like the Luke Wilson and British people thing in hour three. I was like, we're really, I know they're going to matter again in chapters 2 through 4.
That's right. You're setting up a big thing here.
It's annoying that like he felt like he had to like, he's like, I don't have the fucking wagon train. Like, I'm halfway through this. I don't have a wagon train. It's like the only Western storytelling device I didn't include. We got to fix that. So, Horizon's annoying, but Horizon was not bad.
Didn't you think that Luke Wilson was horribly miscast?
Yeah, I did.
He's awful in it, dude. I can't stand him in it. But other than that, I like the movie
a lot. I don't, like, I'm... Was this just like a hire your friends kind of deal? Like, I just have no idea.
Is Luke Wilson a friend of Kevin?
I mean, I don't know. I'm just like, why are any of these people in this? Why is Jenna Malone in this for like 3 scenes? Not that she's like huge and famous or anything. It's just like, what's going on?
She doesn't really. Yeah, she hardly works anymore. I feel like I've seen her since Michael Neon Rooker Demon. Dude, I like Michael Rooker in it. I like seeing him again and in a sort of a meatier role than he's used to.
I need to know. Oh, Jenna Malone was like in Love Lies Bleeding. She had a decent part in that.
That's right. She was also in
Rebel Moon. Goddamn.
Oh wow.
Forgot about Rebel Moon. She has been working. She's been in things that I did not enjoy.
Yeah, she was in the. I didn't realize she was in these Hunger Games movies either. Not, I mean, they're 10 years old, but still.
Yeah, that's it.
When she was in Too Old to Die Young.
I remember her. She's like, she really matters at the very end of the series.
Yeah, man. She's Refn's girl. Refn was using her for a minute there. Oh,
he doesn't make movies anymore either, so.
I had two things to say. One was Lars von Trier is making a new movie, so he's coming out of retirement. And the other one had to do with something Kevin was talking about, and now I totally forget what it was. Kevin, what movie were you talking about on the last time you were talking? Oh, Jesus Christ.
Shaun of the Dead, right?
No. There's something after that, wasn't there? Or maybe it was the Quiet Place.
We've been yapping for an hour since Kevin last spoke.
All right, sorry, Kevin. Sorry. Never mind. I don't know what it was. There was something I was going to tell you guys, and I totally spaced. I should have written it down. But anyways, next time on the show, it is JR's pick.
Are you fucking kidding?
No.
Nope. I don't think so. Kevin picked the favorite, right?
Mm-hmm.
I pick Rapid Fire. Okay. It's your pick.
Yeah, we're just going to...
Let's do it.
Definitely pick something real quick here.
Take your time.
Fuck.
Maybe I can think of what I was going to think of a minute ago.
I can't find my list of movies. Where's my list of movies? I found it. But let's do... This is getting a new Criterion release, and I can't... I don't think
you guys... Uh-oh.
Is something I love, and I think it could be something that you guys can go either way on, which means you'll probably hate it.
It is called...
Hold on. I'm teasing it, but also ready to remove it if you guys have seen it and hated it already. Hold on. All right, here. Okay. Oh, never mind. We're not going to do this.
What was it?
Well, we've done one by the director, like, in the past year. Same director.
So we can't know what it is?
That's I Walked with a Zombie.
Oh, okay, yeah. I'd watch another one of that fellow's films.
I know.
But no, go ahead. Pick something. It's fine. Do whatever you want. Don't let me influence you. Maybe I'll watch I Walk with a Zombie on my own and just to fuck your list up.
I mean, that's fine. I fuck your list up all the time.
You do, constantly.
Yeah, that's all good.
I thought you were going to say, like, No Country for Old Men or something. Like, something's
going on. No. It's like, that would be...
I mean, aggressive. Yeah. That would be aggressive.
Just, I mean, I'm sure we've all seen it, I'm guessing, multiple times.
I feel like I've talked about it on this show at least once, maybe twice. Like, I've seen a lot.
Okay. I am so regretting not realizing this was going to happen.
You're like me now. This is great. Well, I'm like, this is me every time it's my pick.
I know, but I'm bad at... I'm bad at vamping. And you guys aren't. You're just like looking at me, although John can't see me.
I can't see you.
You're just staring at a black screen.
I'm staring at Letterboxd.
Are there even movies?
how big is your list of potential deep dives?
Hundreds of movies.
Hundreds?
No, it's 150. Sorry.
I've got 138 on mine, so that's pretty good.
Whew, okay. What if we allowed someone else to pick a Western that wasn't John?
What? Okay. You gonna do a Western? Is that what you're saying?
Thinking about it.
Oh, bro, you know I'm in.
By all means.
Let's go.
Yeah, all right. We're going to rock with... have we done a John Ford movie before?
I don't think so, actually.
No, we talked about... I think we talked about The Searchers when this was still... Like, before it was Filmiac, when it was still Jordan's show.
Okay, start the track here. Edit out everything that just happened the past 5 minutes. All right. I was totally prepared for this moment, and I'm ready for another Western. And I have not spoken much about John Ford. You know, probably the most famous director of Westerns. We are going to go with 1950s Wagon Master.
Ooh.
You haven't seen this yet, right?
No, it's on my watch list.
Okay. And this clocks in at a just nice 86 minutes.
Beautiful.
Doesn't have like huge stars like Joanne Drew, Harry Carey Jr., Ben Johnson. But like not the people, not the like famous movie stars that John Ford is famous for working with. So yeah.
I like Ben Johnson.
We're going to do this.
When I saw Ben Johnson, I was like, I'm in.
Yeah, he's good. I know the name Ward Bond, but I don't know if I could pick him out of a lineup.
Oh, Ben Johnson's in Red Dawn. That must be why you guys like him so much.
He's in Dillinger. That's what I always saw him in when I was young.
He's in a bunch of good stuff. Okay. Two young horse traders guide a Mormon wagon. Love Mormon wagons.
Fuck yeah.
Secret horror movie.
They encounter the rugged terrain and the cutthroat Clegg gang. I'm in, dude. I'm in. Let's do it. Nice. Okay, well, we're going to be watching Wagon Master for the next episode of Filmiac, which will hopefully be coming up in less time than this one took. A
normal amount of weeks.
Mm. Yeah, usually 2 weeks is what we aim for, but we'll see. Can't make any promises. And until next time, thanks for listening. And, follow us everywhere that you can follow us. Just like Google Filmiac. Shit comes up. And then, thanks for listening. Bye.